Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Hi Bob, the officially unofficial podcast for All Mankind on Apple TV+. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 4, Episode 2, Have a Nice Soul, which is a weird phrase. Have a nice star, Aaron.
Have a nice soul.
System?
I guess it's easier to say than Mars Day, because like that's what they're using it for, like a Martian day, 30 minutes longer than an Earth day is a soul.
I suppose
Although,
so, but
when
that's
I
different.
Walked away from, when I walked away from my first watch, I thought this was like a cynical, like have a nice soul is the entire orbit of Mars around the sun, which I think is like 2 years, which I think is the length of their contract, like the next time the Mars rotates into a favorable position. Okay. So like have a nice soul is kind of like enjoy your tour of duty in Vietnam or whatever. Like, well, you know, we've got you here. Welcome to hell, motherfucker. You know, the...
Yeah,
Keith David meme. But no, I think it's supposed to be like just kind of like a Mars way of saying have a nice day.
Yeah, makes sense.
Nothing about these days look nice.
Well, it depends on what side of the class divide you're on. I could go for some of that pasta. That looks pretty decent.
True. Some broasted chicken.
Yeah, spinach and mushrooms,
red,
not bad.
Potatoes. Yeah.
Especially if I got a TV and my own quarters and. Yeah, there's a lot of things to like about the life on the upper decks. Lower decks, not so much.
Lower decks are a problem.
Mm-hmm. What'd you think about this episode?
So that's the thing. It's an interesting because like I noticed this when I was watching it with my son is like I think it's a great episode of television. It's doing a lot of amazing things, but it's a real bummer to watch. It's like a real bummer to see old man Ed be just a shitter, just the worst kind of like... coal mining representative, you know, it's really a bummer to see Miles like stepping on rake after rake in his employment situation on Mars and realize that he's helpless against it. It's a bummer realizing that like unless we try really hard not to, this is what probably the future of space colonization will look like.
Oh, exactly.
You know,
like this.
Our leading proponent. And our you know, the leader of private spaceflight, Elon Musk, like this is where the storyline's coming from. The tweet that he sent, I think, 2 years ago where he's like, oh, you know, Mars will need a lot of manpower, but it's okay. Everybody can come. And if you don't have the money, you can get a loan to go to Mars. And it's like, yeah, that's a scary, because like, you know, you can see this kind of indentured servitude where it's like, you're not really a slave. It's just that you'll have to pay money you'll never be able to recoup if you fuck up this financial deal on the company side. And the company is free to fuck with you and have all their mistakes financed along the way. And it's like Kafka-esque.
Yeah,
but
totally.
You know, there are places in the world that this is happening right now. It wasn't but 100 years ago that this shit was not happening in our country. And it's a real, so it's like, it's a great episode of television, but it feels like shit to watch. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I'm with you. No, I really like it. And it's only my faith in people like Danielle Poole that maybe this stuff won't be allowed to happen. But I don't know, because you have huge enforcement issues. Even if you make the laws, even if you have people in decent positions who are decent people, how effective can they be against the nameless, faceless corporation?
So I
don't know. I really love seeing a lot of pushback from Danielle and kind of leading the way in spirit too, right? She always has been that kind of guiding light. And I think as Ed has fallen away as like the guy who just out there doing exploration for exploration's sake, Danielle stepped up and really taken that torch and ran with it.
And it's been a while since we've seen it, but like Ed's not been exactly a bastion of progressive movement. You know, he's I would say small C conservative in almost everything that he does, except when he's got his hand on a fucking stick of a rocket. Then he's as radical a cowboy as you'll ever see. But it's kind of a reminder.
Yeah.
And how like it's easy as you get older to be like, fuck him, I got mine. You know, because Ed can think about all the Bohica days and all the, you know, two more weeks and the deprivations, the friends that he's lost, and someone's crying about his paycheck. Mm-hmm. Like, you can see where it all comes from, but also, like, it's just astounding to me that people can get in certain positions and completely forget, like, basic human nature. In exactly the same way, it astounds me sometimes that parents can completely forget what it's like to be a child or a teenager when they're going about their parenting. It's like,
yeah,
Ed, were you guys happy? Didn't you go on like weeks long mutinies? Didn't one of your buddies go crazy and almost kill you all? Like, come on, man. You guys weren't suffering in silence about all this stuff. But in his mind, it's all the, you know, the golden days. So.
Yeah, nostalgia and romancing of history. Recontextualizing it all. So, yeah, Ed, and he's the thing that kills me is he still works for Helios, right? I mean, he is the they that he's talking about, the they that's only looking for a buck. He's supporting that system. It's not like he's outside of it looking in saying, God, they're so awful. He's talking about himself.
When he wasn't happy with the duly appointed officials of his country making decisions on his behalf, he threw a fit, said, fuck this, I'm out, and went and sucked on the corporate teat. That's the thing that's so... And that's like Jack, my son Jack, just because like Ed is his fucking hero, you know? And it was really tough for him to see him in kind of like a villainous role and just like just being a calcified fart. And that's why I said, it's like, you know, be careful. Memento mori. Be careful that this doesn't happen to you one day, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how Ed and Danielle play off each other this season, because I think there's a lot of tension there, both internally with Ed in his own character and his own view of himself, and then externally through Danielle kind of being the one who has to give him orders now. And not being on the same page as him in a lot of regards.
Yeah, and that friction I got, it's like a real disappointment because, you know, you knew that, and I wish I had said this last week, you knew that you're going to get a hearty hi, Bob, at the beginning of this episode.
Absolutely.
You know? And I was going to be really nice. But, yeah, like the way that Ed was kind of treating, like kind of almost humoring Danny's command in a lot of places and like, oh, here's Danny. She's going to try to do the right thing. It's just not, man, it's just hard to watch. It's hard to watch. And like, I don't want to see the old man of Mars mutinying against Danny, Saint Danny of Pool. Like, it's no.
Yeah. I'm with you,
and
man.
And if he does, I hope she ships his ass off to the North Korean capsule. Because
the bodies are stacking up out there. I don't know, man.
Yeah. There's going to be a fucking red October on Mars if they don't watch out, because they've already got the Russians with the speakeasies talking about the opium of the masses. It's literally that, like, that piece of communist propaganda where the one smart shopkeeper or worker is explaining to his dumb coworker about how the bosses are fucking. It's like it's literally that whole scene was that. And things look kind of bad in the old Soviet Union.
Oh, they sure do. Yeah, that Margo stuff was interesting. I think I know what events are transpiring here, but we'll see.
Yeah,
in future episodes.
It's a special significance to Russian citizens for when Swan Lake starts playing on all the channels of the state television networks.
Oh, is it? I'm not familiar with
that.
I learned
about this during, you know, because I don't know if you noticed, Russia is making national news in the last year or two.
I've seen it.
There was a high profile defection / mutiny that was rolling towards Moscow, and there was a lot of memes going around about all the TVs in Russia playing Swan Lake, because there is a history of whenever there's coup attempts, people taking control of the communication centers, putting on, you know, Russians love ballet, just like, you know, oh shit, things are happening.
Is it,
the regular,
is it a,
the,
is it a code word, or is it to try and calm the masses? What
I think it's to keep, it's like to seize the communications, and you don't like, it's ominous to have the to channels just often having test patterns, and you also can't have your broadcasters, who presumably are loyal to the old regime, propagandizing. So you just put on Swan Lake.
Put reruns just watch Swan Lake. What are they giving away the game for?
That's the thing, is I don't think originally was a giving away the game. It's more like, I think in the 80s, when one of the last of the old line, what do they call the guy that sits, the premier or whatever, the Soviet premier, when he died, and the Politburo, their inner circle, was having a hard time deciding who was going to be the new one. It's kind of like, you know, when they're electing a pope, they all kind of locked themselves in a door, and they didn't want any news getting out. So they just played Swan Lake until they were unified with who they wanted to. And then that started a tradition where every time a leader was deposed, or I think most recently in 1991, when the government, communist hardliners arrested Mikhail Gorbachev and marched on the parliament, apparently Boris Yeltsin got on one of the tanks and, like, with a bullhorn, essentially called all loyal Russians that believed in democracy to serve. And, like, thousands of Russians came around and surrounded the tanks. And, like, there was this tense standoff between the military guys, like, I'm not going to fucking roll over these people. And the people, like, we're not going to. And they won continued the freedom for the Russian people. And
yeah,
it's a damn shame.
The event we're warming up to here, right? Like, yeah, we're 10 years.
It's happening
past
a decade late.
Happen, but
yeah. And I do wonder, because we got a lot of really interesting feedback about analyzing the situation in terms of, like, the yada yada of the last 8 to 9 years. But I do wonder, like, yeah, why is it collapsing now when things, you know, things look so up for the Soviet Union? I was not, you know, I think you even called that, like, there's something going on. I'm like, I can't imagine. There might be an attempt, but surely it'll be put down. Maybe, I don't know, maybe not. Or maybe the hardliners win and they're just going to return to, like, the Cold War.
I don't know. So all of the stuff we've talked about, I'm trying to view in the context of Star Trek. Right. This is not a dystopian future. This is a utopian future story they're trying to tell.
Yeah.
So unless they have a multi-season arc for that, I don't think they're going to go down the negative path here. I think, cooler heads will prevail. Things will work out and we'll have a better scenario at the end of the season than we did at the beginning.
Well, we know for sure that, like, the fall of the Soviet Union would happen a lot different during the age of the internet. So that alone, since the internet is earlier and it's like this is happening across everyone's television screen simultaneously, it's not like a miscommunication about the Berlin Wall that blows up out of control. Like, it'll be interesting. And like I said, I don't know, because, like, the Soviet Union is still standing. Would it be good for it to fall in 2003?
I don't know. Possibly.
Like, or is it better for there to be still a bastion of communism that's kind of working as a counterpart part to American capitalism? I don't know. But
I mean, even their people are very conflicted about it, right? So
right. So, that's the other thing. And the idea that these Russians are enjoying a certain amount of freedoms and transparency and that being taken away. And that's a sad thing. And I was reading about the history of this, is just like, yeah, so many brave Russians fought to kind of have some kind of form of democracy and representation and freedoms. And, man, you look at 30 years hence, like, a lot of the retrospectives just talk about, like, there's one from the Soviet commander who was in charge of the tanks, and he got awoken in the middle of the night and got this order, and so he starts rolling his guys towards that, and he resolved, as he was, like, I guess taking command, he's like, I'm not going to hurt anyone no matter what happens. I'm not going to be the guy that gives the order. And that's the guy who Boris Yeltsin met, and, like, he spent the rest of his life in, like, poverty and got drummed out of the military and working menial jobs, barely making, like, they interviewed, because these guys, I think, still alive, or he died recently, interviewed, and he's just so bitter and disappointed about like what Russia has become from where it was so hopeful in the 90s. And it's like, man, that'd be a hell of a story to tell in the middle of For All Mankind too. But it's almost like so much story that they're setting up in these first two episodes, and they're gonna have to tell it all over the span of like the next year or so in terms of like, this is gonna be an action-packed season, I think.
Yeah, for sure. We got a lot of balls in the air, and we haven't even talked about the Kelly and Alita stuff yet.
Oh my god! And also Margot's in the middle of it. Margot,
right?
Who
how
is
does she factor in?
A disappeared American citizen with no state is going to be in the middle of this fucking riot, and what is that going to do to the international situation? Because it seems like, oh boy, this was not the bullfinch being patient for winter to thaw. This bullfinch.
I think she was trying to be patient. That's the thing. Like, she just got caught up in...
Yeah, by wading into police brutality against the...
Well, yeah.
Like,
I mean,
I don't know.
Just curious. She's a curious
person. Pretty bold bullfinch, if you ask me.
All right. Well, let's get into the recap.
Yeah, let's do it. You're listening to Hi, Bob. We'll be right back.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hi, Bob. Welcome back to More For All Mankind.
We start off with Miles, transport dropping down from Phoenix to Happy Valley, where he meets Palmer James, the director of Helios Human Services, the HR of space, I guess, who gives him his group an orientation speech and a brief tour before heading to their quarters several stories below the surface.
The tragedy of this is like everyone stepping off this shuttle was sufficiently awe-inspired by the place that they were at, and they were all ready to accept deprivations and hardship. What they weren't ready to accept is like bullshit and lies and contractual obligations that the company's going to weasel out of. It's just like, it's interesting to watch the idealism of all these new guys. And like, they're all like, oh my God, look at Sojourner. And like, this is so fucking cool. Like just the reality of being on another planet. And it's so jarring to see Ed yank that knot in his tail at the end of, towards the end of the episode. Like, no, we saw these people came here for, yeah, sure. They want to make a buck, but they weren't here expecting like to be treated like princesses, you know, sure. Princes and princesses. And it just sucks. Cause like, I just watch Miles kind of be charmed by everything. And then, mm-hmm. but you see the like, oh, base script, you know, the word script,
the company currency. That's never a good sign.
We live pretty close to Appalachia, and you hear the word script and people mm-hmm. reach for their back pockets to cover their wallet and put a hand on their gun because that the whole company store, I load 16 tons. What do you get? Another day yep. older and deeper in debt.
Yep. Tennessee Ernie Ford, he knew what's up.
I wonder if that song's gotta go. That's gotta be a needle drop at some point. Like I'm loving
certainly.
I'm loving the gorillas. I'm loving the lyrics porn, but someone's gotta be loading 16 tons of lithium this season at some point.
I really would have liked a better shot of Sojourner 1. As we come down, I wanted to see what it looks like because I'm sure it hasn't decayed much at all. I just wanted to see the hulk of it.
It would have been nice to see like a shot of the shuttle cruising by and you're on the ground kind of shooting over this old, but like uh-huh. I think the point also was like,
yep,
this is just you're just rushing past all these wonders and get underground. Like
and
all this amazing
is gonna be
stuff.
Your experience. Like all these amazing things to be experienced out here on the surface, and you're kept at a distance from all of it.
These aren't for you. These are not for you. These are for the astronauts and cosmonauts and the scientists. They are not for you.
Yeah. It took me
like his frustration
all the way
is our frustration.
My second watch just to understand that that's what they're doing there. At least I think they are. I'm gonna give them
I think
the
so, and it works really well because I'm the same way. I'm like with Miles. I'm trying to crane. I'm look at you know. I'm still mm-hmm. you know when I get an airplane. So when I get a window seat on an airplane, I'm still fucking impressed with it. You know.
Yeah, but now you're getting to get through his cell, zoomed in cell phone view.
Yeah,
and he doesn't even have a great view of it. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
He's Palmer. This guy, he's not the typical HR director. I'm gonna say, he's got much more of a military background, obviously.
Gotta be ex NASA, right? If he's Ed's right hand man.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I wonder if this guy was like a background guy, like a younger dude on the moon or something.
Maybe. His face looks familiar, but I can't place it.
Right, but then again, it's like you know how many people has Ed worked for in the last 20, 30 years during the space program. He just kind of like seems like he's from that mold.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he talks, he's either like super stolen valor or he's served something somewhere, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. No, he might have been a drill sergeant at one point.
He also dropped the word pogue on Miles. Do you know what that means?
Huh.
That's like a pejorative in the military for a person other than grunt, like the support staff.
Huh. Okay.
You know. So him, like, that seems like he's drawn a distinction from himself and this guy who's, you know, you're not ex-military or ex-NASA or whatever.
Yeah, you're soft. Whatever. They have Mars time watches. Apparently 2.75% longer days up here on Mars.
And this is why Elon will get away with the indentured servitude because
okay.
I'd almost do the 2-year tour just for a Martian watch, right? Like you go back to Earth and you got that fucking thing.
Uh-huh.
That's a flex. It'll be a flex probably for this entire generation because there's just going to be so few people that make it. But like,
yeah, if you wash out, you don't get to keep that watch. So,
because that's the thing, I think if I went into this deal with my eyes wide open, I think I'd still take it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. 2 years of your life for Miles says less than he was making at home. I was under the impression that he was making nothing at home, but.
He's making, I think he was like, looked like he was working at like a quick tire change place or something. Like, I don't think he's making enough to cover a family of four in this economy.
That's crazy, man. That is crazy. Yeah. You go millions of miles from Earth and you spend 2 years in extreme circumstances, in deprivation, and you're making at least 30% less than you were before, or most 30%.
16 tons. And I mean, it's like, right? Like, you could say the same thing about, like, I go down into the bowels of this mountain. I break my back every day to load 16 tons.
Fill my lungs with stuff that's going to kill me.
And I'm broker than I was the day before. Like, how can these, but like, it's because people are desperate and people don't read the fine print. And even if they do read the fine print, they think, well, surely I'll get the bonuses because I'm going to work real hard and everybody's going to work real hard, not thinking that like shit that is not your responsibility might. Yeah, it's that's what, but I'm saying it if they do this, they will fucking work, and it always will, because there's always going to be desperate people wanting to better themselves, and there's always going to be people that take that gambit. And you know, you'll get the Disney story about the one broke ass oil rig guy that went to Mars and, you know, saved the day and made his millions, and everybody else will be chasing it. You know, the moon miners on television, everybody getting rich off the moon. It's like, yeah, it's like, it's always like,
yeah, for sure. A lot of propaganda out there with that moon miners show.
At least in this colonization, there's not like existing Martians we're going to exploit and eradicate to make room for, like, you know, I guess also the microbes.
we'll see.
Still not the same. Still not the same. So there's I guess that one silver lining.
Yeah, we don't know if the microbes are up there yet. Kelly's program got cut short. So we're also on Mars still, and the Bobs say hi to each other. Ed gives Danielle a tour of the facilities. She spots Lee, the North Korean, the first man on Mars, tries to say a friendly hello, but he's with a North Korean superior who keeps his hello very reserved.
That's tough. Like I said, this is like, I kind of emotionally wanted one episode just to have the Bobs, you know, in peace and harmony with no problems and kind of be nostalgic. But that's not what they're doing. The situation is. Yeah. You want one episode, you get one scene. And it's so, this show's so smart because, like, I knew it was going to be a problem when, you know, Grigori Kuznetsov and Tom Parker, I forget his name. See, it's part of the problem. Go out there and they both get killed and only one of them gets the headlines, and then now on Mars all the NASA folks are wearing his name, his initials on a patch, but not the, it's like, it's almost like, I don't know that I believe it, that people would be this tone deaf, that you would have the loss of two guys and only one of the initials get worn. Like, that's so callous and cruel to the people that you're working shoulder to shoulder with, that like, it's got
to
be a revolution.
Well, I think that's the thing. They're not working shoulder to shoulder, right?
True.
These people are tucked away underneath in the bowels of the base.
That's how it works. You segregate.
Interface with them.
Yeah. So, like, you know, the only time you have contact with these people, they're complaining to your face. And it's like, fuck you, man. I've ate a face full of shit to be on Mars. I don't want to hear. Yeah, we're eating kale and fresh steamed broccoli and homegrown Martian noodles now, but you know, you should have seen the MREs we were eating in the 70s. And
yeah,
fuck them, I got mine.
No, they need some kind of rotation for quarters and food and stuff, where, you know, a certain number of people, both new and old recruits, get the shit food and the shit quarters, and then, you know, you do your duty there and you go to the domes or whatever they have upstairs. Yeah. You need to live like a king. And then you go back to the shit thing so you can appreciate what you had up there, you know?
I have a prediction.
What's that?
I think someone's going to kill this tree as an act of,
oh my God,
economic terrorism.
The apple tree?
Yeah, I think they're...
Who's going to cut down the apple tree?
I think they're going to either George Washington it, or they're going to round it up. They're going to do something, because this is obviously a big symbol to the topsiders about how far they've gone on Mars. And
it's going to be, but I don't know, like I said, he's going to wait until it bears fruit, and then he's going to take all the fruit from it and make vodka.
Because alternately, because we've been talking about, like, there's nothing that's going to stop the wheels of capitalism is going to grind the way they do. But, like, what if they're telling a story of a strong leader like Danielle Poole who can see the tensions and do enough? Because, like, I also think if everyone had the same deprivations, Like, okay, mm-hmm. the top side is a seniority. They do get the nice windows, and they do get to go top side, and that's really cool. And, you know, we can't, you know. But, like, if they're all eating the same food, if they all had, like, if everyone had the bandwidth rationed evenly, and so maybe, like I said, I think people, it's like, that's human nature, is that we will endure shocking deprivations as long as we're all in it together. You know?
Sure.
And if Danielle seems smart enough to realize that, and I hope that she can get enough support and kind of with guerrilla warfare type of programs like restoring bandwidth, I hope maybe she can turn it around.
Yeah, she's got a tough road ahead of her, though, because the forces outside of this base, the political forces, are really putting pressure on places that she doesn't have control over, you know?
Yeah.
She has control over Mars. She can do anything she wants up here because she's the commanding officer and people have to listen to her. But if the president calls her back, like calls up Hobson and says, hey, we need to get Danielle off there. Let's get somebody from Helios up there commanding this thing.
Yeah.
She's gone, you know?
And she doesn't even have her whole staff behind her. Like, Ed seems like he is, again, humoring her at best. He is not agree or bought in on any of her worldviews that she's coming away with.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll
be a problem, seems like.
But it works out in this episode. And man, they have me trained to think the worst of every scene. Like, oh, here's how it's going to go spectacularly wrong, right?
Yeah,
going to hook up one Cat 5 cable too many and boom, the whole thing's exploded.
Yep.
But we'll get there. With this apple tree experiment, it's just a taste of kind of the hydroponics and the growth operation they have up there, because apparently they're growing 3/4 of their food.
Shocking. Up there. That was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't get to see how they're doing that, but maybe in future episodes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go back to Miles. His group is given a tour of the lower decks. They're told not to go in the North Korean part of Level 3. The North Korean compound is entirely separate. No one goes in there.
Yeah, Miles is supposed to be on the surface doing mining and stuff, and now he finds out because the asteroid mining is shutting down and the projects are being cut that he's just going to be a glorified HVAC guy, which I think if that was the only disappointment would be rolled with. But the other thing that I want to talk about that, you know, because like there's so much to talk about with the arrival of Miles is they had this established shot of Happy Valley, which I thought Happy Valley looked huge when we were just like seeing old man, you know, at nighttime with old man Mars looking out his window. But when you see like the minivan, the Martian minivan, and I just love how efficient it is, you know, like it's got like the airlock on the top to drive under the shuttle, just drive right underneath it and get everybody out. And there's an airlock on the back where you can just pull up like a semi at Walmart and get all your supplies and goods and people out. But like it looks so tiny. And then you realize that it's because it goes down deep. And I wonder if they're like if their food ops are like underground, it would make sense, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it could be.
I mean, it's like, yeah, everything
there, aside from
everything
sunlight.
On top side has got to be more expensive and probably more dangerous because, you know, in terms of like radiation and whatnot. So I don't know. Happy Valley is cool. It's like it's going to 5 floors deep and the bottom two are under construction, which seems like that's where all the work, like that's where the speakeasy is. Like,
oh, you think so?
Ilya's I understood that yeah, it's on one of the restricted areas that, you know.
Nice.
They're kind of it's like I said, this is
so... he on the construction team? Is that how he's able to get away with that?
Ooh. He's got to have some kind of connect that puts him in connection with, you know, the ports and the facilities, and yet he's also being able to squirrel away the speakeasy thing just all under the base command too. That's the other, because like no one approved this, surely.
You wouldn't think so.
Yeah,
I don't know, maybe he's plying Ed with like cheap, you know, I don't know, bathtub vodka or something.
This shit just feels so The Expanse. It feels belter as fuck down there. Everyone's speaking
different
languages.
This is the guy with the chickens and... we've seen this exact thing on The Expanse before. Yeah, so like you said, Miles is assigned as an HVAC guy since he's supposed to be working on the asteroid program, but it's stalled. Things are really not turning out like he expected. And then he goes and meets his bunk mates, Gerardo, Ilya, Jerry, and I think Samantha Massey is also in this scene, but I couldn't tell. They don't introduce her yet. We've seen her in previous episodes.
That's Cousin Mary from Downton Abbey, right?
Well, not literally, but yes.
Not literally, but yeah. Like
He finds a picture in his bunk of Parker, the dead astronaut from the failed asteroid mission. Oof, that's got to be a bad omen, right?
Yeah, just like it reminds me a lot of like that Band of Brothers episode, The Replacements, where it's like how hard it is to be the guy who's joining after a crew after someone's dead. It's like it's already like, you know, you're homesick and you're in a scary thing. And then like you kind of want to find that esprit de corps, but like your squad mates are not ready for it yet.
Yeah, it's too much baggage there.
It turns around, like, I think that they finally embrace him by the end, but like they could have played that off for a couple more episodes, because yeah, it's just rough. And the way she came, yeah, I think Sam was there, because she's the one that takes the photo from him when he finds it, you know, his dead man's family in his bunk, which that's the other thing. I think that they kind of were hinting that, like, you know, when the HR guy is talking about how they radiated the shit out of everything to keep on how like hygienic ever, and it's like, well, how well did you really clean this guy's bunk if you didn't catch the photo that was shoved between the mattress and the crease? Like, what else is down there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Fair point. I didn't think about that.
Hot bunking. It's been 2 months too. It's not like they didn't have time, because they established it's been at least 2 months from Danny's speech since.
Yeah,
the,
I mean, between the time of, you know, him taking off from Earth and getting to Mars.
Yeah,
gonna take
right.
Some time.
Yeah, a month or so.
I like this picture on the wall of the surface of Mars. It's like this token of, oh yeah, here's where you are. You'll never see this in person. He might as well have stayed home and put a picture of the surface of Mars in his bedroom.
That's the thing, like, how much would it cost to put some flat screen TVs that you could tune into, you know, like on the four, you got like four walls, you got four screens, and you got a camera that looks out over the four directions that happen. Like, that would be just getting this natural day night cycle would be something, right?
Yeah, that would be much better than some static poster.
And it's just a shitty one. Like, it's like the cheapest kind of poster frame you get out of Michael's, you know.
It's not even a very good shot of the surface.
No.
It's just like flat nothing. Mars has a lot of mountains and shit, and they don't get any of that in the photo.
Yeah, it's like something that literally Sojourner took. Instead of something, you know, because I kept on thinking, like, you know, we watch Silo, and like, you know, the whole big thing is Silo's got the one outside camera that everybody, and it's like, why can't you...
Mm-hmm.
You got to do at least as good as the dystopian Silo show, you know?
Right.
If you're not treating your workers at least as good as dystopian Silo show, then I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. I mean, this might turn into that show eventually. Who knows? We are underground.
That's true. Another 100 levels will be in Silo City.
Get busy, Ilya. Get busy digging.
Yep.
Danielle addresses her new subordinates with a speech honoring Grigori and asking for their help in the coming challenges. She says there will never be a penalty for speaking the truth. It's a great philosophy. Can she keep that promise?
I don't know. I mean, it's a great speech. It's Danielle, and inspire of men and women.
Yeah, I love it.
And then, you know, like, that's also, it's all real, you know? Like, she did love Kuz, and this man did want his sacrifice to mean something, and... the thing is, and she says, we were in it together and we're in it together now. I did think it was interesting that, like, none of the lower deck people, like, this felt like a bridge speech, you know? Mm-hmm.
Totally.
None of the lower decks are hearing this. And I wondered if that was like, it seems like if it is a mistake, it's one that she's trying to rectify even in this episode. But like,
I think so. Are the lower decks invited to the soccer match at the end?
How many people are in Happy Valley? Because, like, it seemed to me that this was all of, like, the scientists, but I don't know, maybe. Because, like, if Miles was in that room, I'm assuming not.
He was not in that room. He was down watching the videos. Him and Samantha were both in their quarters, so...
Right. So but
they
seem
they were alone there, so I don't know.
It was in the cafeteria where it's like there's the other mm-hmm. things. I don't understand why not everyone can't go to the cafeteria. Like right. maybe the food's more expensive. But like if you want to treat yourself, you're a lower debt. Yeah, that's some
that's
shit.
That's a fucked up thing.
It's like, yeah, maybe it's twice, three times as much. And like, you know, most of the lower decks are trying to save money. But like, you want it's your birthday. You want to treat yourself. Go up to the Lido deck and get with the real buffet. No, you can't.
I wonder if the script works up there. I bet it does. Get them to buy in on the script, right?
Yeah, but it's almost like they're treating like an officer's mess where it's like
they really just, are. Yeah.
Yeah, get out of here, enlisted, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep, huge class divide. There's a literal class divide here. You can't even walk in the same halls as the people on the upper levels. All right, let's go over to Aleta. Her husband wakes up in the middle of the night, finds her trying to fix their TV. She's got it completely disassembled on the floor. He tells her, look, this erratic behavior and erratic depressive behavior has to stop. And he suggests she go back to NASA, but she insists that she can't. He gets very angry.
I don't know.
He needs to readjust his worldviews, I think, because in my mind, there is no connection between moping around and playing Guitar Hero. Shame on him.
She's been doing it for 3 months. It's starting to feel like a cry for help.
Yeah, you know? I suppose so.
I thought this was a pretty good spouse scene, you know? Like, he clearly has not, you know, given her time to kind of figure things out, and he's observed her in a pattern of probably self-destructive soothing behaviors that are not sustainable, and he's like starting to affect the kids because they're worried about, like, you know, when what's going on with mom, and you know, he's not making demands and not making any ultimatums, but he's just like pointing out that, like, you can't stay here, like, you cannot, this is not a good place to just be stuck at.
Mm-hmm.
It is too bad to see, especially with the, it's funny that the, I was trying to think of it, it feels anachronistic in 2003 for a person to be this anti-mental health, but like they also mentioned that the president is making it a priority, so maybe that like the progress we made in mental health in our world, we made so much progress in like sex and gender equality that like that never happened, you know,
or took a backseat at least. Yeah,
maybe. Yeah, because I was but also like that's 20 years ago, like,
yeah, it was certainly more stigmatized 20 years ago than it is now,
but not that, like, I was like, I, you know, I was a pretty fundamentally conservative kind of Christian person at that point, and I was getting therapy, but then again, I was like the young generation, so. Mm-hmm. But so was Aleta. Yeah, I don't know. I can't quite figure out if she's just being stubborn and she's trying to subconsciously, you know, keep doing the things that she's doing or what. Because it does seem like a lot of the NASA stuff is relating from this trauma, you know. She's playing it off, I think, in this episode. It's like, oh, well, it's not that I'm too traumatized to work at NASA. It's just NASA's different, which no. It is.
She's traumatized. Yeah, I mean, the flashbacks. The whole scene with Hobson later tells you everything you need to know about it.
I wonder if Aleta, like, subconsciously she sees this, like, because obviously she jumps into this mission, like, the idea of robotic exploration where she's not going to have lives on the line. Like, uh-huh. That really appeals to her. Like, okay, I can still be in space. I can still do science. I can still contribute to humanity, but I don't have to worry about anyone ever dying because I'm freaking out about this, that, or the other. Like, yep. That's...
Absolutely. No, it seems like a perfect solution for both of them, honestly.
It's not a way to heal, though. It's a way to just, like, sure. My arm's broken, so I'm not going to use it anymore.
Yeah,
it's
yeah. Not like, it's avoidance behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is just who Aleta is, right? I mean, I look at Aleta and her history over the last few seasons, and she has been the person who goes her own way. Like, she fights and kicks against a lot of stuff, and this feels like just an outcropping of her personality, you know?
But she's not, like, stuck in her ways. Like, she can, when called for it, you know, like, make peace with Bill and even become good friends with him, and she can recognize, you know, she's... And the way that, you know, the fact that she has spoke to somebody and she was on medication shows that, you know, at one point she was on board with that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I just wonder, it's like, what happened in that process that, you know, I wonder if we'll explore, is like, why is she so anti kind of personal development? She just wants to find a new work to throw herself into and kind of bury her head into.
Yeah, I get the feeling the therapy didn't go well in her mind, probably because of her. Probably she was not saying the things that are really bothering her, and she was fighting the therapy,
not taking it serious. And also maybe she had a shitty therapist, because a lot of people, you know, that therapists are just like anybody else. You get good ones and bad ones. Have you ever had a bad doctor? You ever had a bad doctor that makes you feel bad for going to them? Well, you can get that in therapy too. So
sure.
But
she'll get past this. You know, like you said, she is resistant to a lot of good things as they come her way, but she's also eventually open to them. And I think she knows how to get past this. It's just going to take a lot of doing, a lot of time, and a lot of struggle.
Yeah, I hope that, because to me, I see this thing that she's doing with Kelly as like a form of self-medication. You know, she's
totally,
she's not taking care of herself. She's just distracting herself, and I hope that she finds peace eventually throughout this series, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm. All right, Miles tries to view a D-mail from his family, but it's not streaming. He's told the bandwidth downstairs is poor and nobody's got any comms for weeks. This is wild to me. So I guess it's only downloaded part of this video because of the poor bandwidth. And it's playing the part that it has. I was like, are they seriously streaming stuff
they're
from
streaming.
Earth? But they're not.
They're streaming stuff from Earth. That's the only explanation. Because it's not the it's the communication satellite.
That's psychotic. You wouldn't stream stuff from Earth. You would download it, and it would become available when the entire thing is there, right?
So you've never seen a corporation implement something in a shitty way that is completely...
with no fail-safes, yeah.
With no consideration to this things being more efficient or...
I haven't seen it happen.
Why have I not been able to play a video on the front page of Reddit on my mobile device for about 2.5 years now? Like, it's a complete crapshoot whether it'll play or not when I hit the play button. You know,
I've never seen the episode of a new season of Game of Thrones come out and it be really hard to stream it and all sorts of problems. No.
Okay. I know you're joking because.
Yeah, totally. You're right. It happens. It happens all the time.
But it is. Yeah, it is hard to believe. And like the idea that like. I almost feel like it was written heavy-handed. Like the topsiders are so, but like I don't know, because there's a lot of history where like people can get that way, where it's just like, well, why do they need bandwidth? You know?
Well, that's the thing. Like, okay, it's one thing for it to be a huge disparity and a very obvious thing when you look at it, and it's another thing to write it that way. You know, it is written heavy-handedly. There are. Five scenes in this episode, six, seven scenes in this episode that are all about that.
Yeah, so it seems like you would implement some kind of rationing system where it's like, you know, the topsiders will get their messages on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and the lower decks will get them on Tuesday,
like
Thursday,
so, yeah.
Saturday, and you know, still unbalanced, but it's just like, yeah, the fact that the topsiders have everything that they would want, and they want for nothing except for they're dying on dangerous missions. But then the lower deck guys are too. Yeah, it's just really fucked and depressing.
What would probably happen is they'd assign somebody back on Earth to look through the messages, determine which ones are actually important, and then send those along and hold the others for later when the bandwidth problems are fixed. Right?
That's the thing. It's like it does seem like the topsiders, the upper deck people, are using their position. Like, oh well, this is mission critical communication between the scientists, but like
some of it is,
and probably it is. But Danny also sees like, yeah, you talking to Kelly,
yeah, that's privilege. That's not mission critical. T minus 3 seconds until the ad.
Touchdown, and we're back.
All right. You know, we just talked about one scene where they make it pretty obvious that there are some disparities between the classes here. Let's go to the montage where that's all they do. They contrast the upper levels with the lower levels. Danielle's life is comparatively nice. She's schmoozing with her crew in open spaces while Miles is working the cramped, uncomfortable tunnels downstairs. And this montage ends with Miles working on the HVAC upstairs and getting disrespected by someone from the Happy Valley upper class.
Not even disrespected, not treated like a person.
Yeah, he's treating Miles like he's subhuman. Fuck this guy.
Yeah.
I could not hate him more.
Yeah. But I love that. Yeah, I thought the... Look, I love gorillas, mm-hmm. You know, nothing wrong with dropping Clint Eastwood. It's a weird choice, though, isn't it? It doesn't have anything in terms of...
Yeah.
I guess it is. I guess... Was Abe, the funky homo sapien, is kind of talking about, like, corporations pulling the wool over your eyes. It kind of gets there a little bit at the end, but it's...
Hearing it in this show has made me realize I've never actually listened to the lyrics of that. I know some of the lyrics. Like, the future is coming on, but I don't know what the context for any of those lyrics are.
It is that, and that's the future is coming, and this is the future, right?
Right.
And it's like, meet the old boss, new boss, same as the old boss. Like, Miles is, you know, like the...
Totally.
You can't get away from it because it's just the way we organize humanity right now. In the free
crazy.
Markets. And I mean, it's not crazy. We got here. That's the thing. It's like we got here for a reason.
It is crazy.
It's like people.
What's
people
in
living
of?
In people living in castles in a medieval period. They weren't crazy for doing the serfdom shit. Like, it was just this is all natural outcroppings and growings from more and more organized human societies. And we just haven't quite figured out how to grow beyond our current bullshit. But
well, I say it's crazy because what is it in service of? What is the goal of organizing ourselves this way?
Because every other way we've tried is worse and leads to famine and starvation, and this one does too, but maybe less of it, and we get shinier, nicer things, and things get cheaper over time. I think that's why we put up with it.
It feels like just expansion. Expansion is the goal. I mean, that's always the goal of humanity, right? Like,
I mean, it's the goal of every living thing too, really.
Exactly.
Like, you try to grow and take up as much space, and everything else tries to do the same and may the best organism.
Why don't we get past that? Why don't we get past that? We've done that. Our planet is dominated by us. Can we not figure out a way to stop focusing on expansion at all cost? Maybe focus on quality of life.
1 billion years of nature red in tooth and claw, and we've had about 10,000 years of civilization.
We could fix
it. We haven't quite got it. We haven't quite got all the monkey shit out of our brains. All right.
I know, but we have
Let
to keep talking
the
about
shit.
It. We have to figure it out because this is unsustainable. Unsustainable.
Yeah. And I do wonder, like,
literally,
people watching this, like, is everybody, are there people that, like, watch this and, like, are think it's wild or they think it's, like, super preachy or do they, you know,
sure.
I just wonder, like, what it is, what other perspectives, because, like, obviously I'm primed for all this. Like, this is kind of like, yeah, I'm ready to hear this message. This is kind of preaching to the choir. But, like, can people look at the current state of our space expansion and the current way that the world looks and the people who are leaders in space and the things that they're saying about how they want to organize and colonize planets and think that this isn't what we're kind of sleepwalking towards?
I'm sure they're out there. Yeah,
like there might be different solutions they have, but like, can we all agree on the problem?
Right.
That we can, or maybe it's just like, yeah, so that's a tragedy. But if you try to do it any other way, you'd have bigger ones. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's funny if we drill down.
Well, that's an easy excuse, right? Like,
yeah.
The what if we tried something different is tough to sell, because the thing we're doing is working for some people. And those people have the positions of power and they're getting all the benefits. And like, why would they give that up? It's a hard fight to get them to give that up for in favor of something better for more people.
Yeah. Yeah. And they have a disproportionate amount of the economic and the political power, too. So what are you going to do? The particulars of this I thought were really funny. Like Danny having her own private room, gazing out at his beautiful Martian landscape, smash cut to Miles having to watch his roommate Clipper fucking toenails. Which you would, you would in the kind of dorm room environment, but it's just, yeah, it's kind of gross. And
I mean, it had everything but like the toilet spraying Miles in the face, right? It was like, that would have been the capper.
Yeah, you see Danny and how like camaraderie there she shares with her people, and everyone takes her serious and listens to her, and then Miles is getting browbeat by some dude that's like, you know, treating him like he's a fucking idiot. And
The life is severe, right? He doesn't have time for small talk. They've got 15 things on their list that they got to do today.
Yeah, she's getting espresso out of machine. He's filling up instant coffee from the sink water, and the bowls of free condoms. I thought that was like an interesting.
Oh, I missed that. What?
Yeah, there's this wall dispenser that has a bunch of Magnum condoms, and it says "Help yourself," like the things that are free. And it's like, well, why? Oh, because they don't want people getting pregnant or getting diseases, because that's extra money.
Wait,
like
all,
the things.
They're all Magnums.
I did notice.
Does Mars gravity do something to the size of?
Yeah, it's like, you know how they say the astronauts, they get that moon face, and like their bodies start holding, they kind of getting swole out and bloated. That it's the Martian chode. It's the diagnosed Martian chode syndrome.
Jesus,
just the thickest, swollenest.
Are you kidding me? I can get a watch and a Martian chode. Sign me up. Me up.
You get an extra 30 minutes a day and half an inch in diameter. Just sign up. Sign up on the line, Duster.
I do love how
it all comes together, where the, you know, Miles is calling the lift and Danny's getting on the lift, and then the door opens and a split screen is
it's unified, and then they walk past each other. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't even say hi, right? Like, there's no...
No,
there's no greeting there. There's no nothing from Danielle, who's schmoozing with everybody else. Why isn't she schmoozing with this guy?
And yet, without comprehensively talking to the lower decks, just strolling through, she's able to get a vibe.
Yeah, that is the thing. I you know, Danny might not say hi here, but she's looking. She's understanding these people by observing
the disparity
and cares.
You have to. Yeah, and that's what's so funny. It's like, you don't even have to like ask for people's lived experiences. You can just like walk. Oh shit! I live in this airy, light place with, you know, catered meals and unlimited bandwidth and privacy. And these other people are living in shithole type environments, like dark.
Yeah.
No light. No good food. Yeah. This is the future that Ed wants. That's the thing that just I keep coming back to. Ed has no problems with how Martian society is organized.
I mean, why would he? He's
smoking his hydroponic weed.
Right, and stare out at the Mars sunset.
Sure.
All right, let's go over to Earth real quick. We are at the Carl Sagan Center for Planetary Science, which I think is a stand-in for the research center over at SETI. I don't know. Anyway, a robot is exploring a mock lava tube. Kelly's educating Administrator Hobson on the likely place to find life on Mars. The Helios robotic tests are going extremely well. However, Hobson tells her that her research operation is being shut down in favor of getting the asteroid capture program back on track.
Yeah,
this totally makes sense. Well, I was wondering last episode, like, what does Kelly do? Aside from staying at home, taking care of her child, that didn't seem like it would totally fulfill her. Well, turns out she's been doing a lot of shit. She's been working on a program to find life on Mars. And it seems to be going pretty well. And she's excited about it.
Yeah, that's the thing that I guess is kind of like the... kind of sad to me about where we're at with exploration of space, is that it's less and less about humans going out and doing it. And I understand why. Like, why would you send a person to Mars and you have to figure out how they're going to drink water and eat food and how they're going to stay happy and not get depressed and not go crazy, where you can send a robot to take soil samples and look for life and look for water and do all the things that a human can do. Maybe not as well now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, because we're thinking like, oh, there's gonna be life on Mars, and that's gonna bring Kelly back. It's like, Kelly never left space. Kelly's been raising a child alone. Why is she sending, you know, programming Mars to her robots to explore Mars? It's interesting.
Yeah,
we were right, but also completely wrong.
Apparently they're contracting, I think, with Helios, yeah. Right? Because they said, or not with Helios, sorry, with the DevIS's new robotics company. I guess he left Helios and now he's working on robotics, which raises a lot of questions for me. But this makes sense, right? You contract.
Does it?
Because
I thought it answered
industry.
A lot. Like, because I was like, how did Dev survive the, you know, destruction of Helios and how's he going? But like, it seems like he spun off another tech company and surprise, surprise, yeah. He's going to be working with some of the principals on For All Mankind.
It answers those questions, but this whole episode, I'm starting to wonder in retrospect about who was the real villain last season, because I felt like Dev at some point turned a corner into he had a heel turn where he became sure. A bit of a villain.
Yeah.
A hypocrite. Around the whole rescue mission out in space. But mm-hmm. I wonder if we won't realize by the end of this that Richard Hilda Beast or whatever his name is, the co-founder of Helios, yeah. Is not
Richard
the real
Water
villain.
Buffalo.
Or is Hilliard, the real, I think it is, but
or is the real villain capitalism? You know,
well, it always is, yeah,
yeah,
at least in modern times. But yeah. But I'm looking at Dev and I'm thinking, okay, well he left Helios. Helios is doing all these really horrible, you know, company store debtor's prison type shit up on right. Mars. Is that because he left and Richard is the guy who's really pushing that stuff and now Dev is out there exploring again with robotics? Because yeah, there's profit in robotics. There's just like there's profit in Helium-3 and all the stuff that Dev mm-hmm. was doing at Helios, but he's out there with exploration goals. Whereas I don't feel like that's the goal from Helios.
No, Helios is all about extracting profit, it seems like. It's a good question. And I'm not sure.
But yeah, because he's not doing it, right? It's NASA. NASA has always been the force for exploration, doing it for the right reasons. And then you just have them contracting with the private companies. So I don't know. I am questioning.
Like
I would
thing,
like to see
like
Dev back.
I do find it hard to believe that Dev in the you know, Water Buffalo's place wouldn't make the exact same decisions based on what I... Because, you know, Dev was all a good game about talking egalitarianism and stuff like that, but clearly... You know, is an animal farm situation where not all the animals are equal in his eyes. It's like yeah. that, and that's what starts it all. That's the
well for him. It was about ego. It felt more so than the profits, right? Because he was throwing money down a hole last season to try and get to Mars, but that was all ego driven, right?
His ego driven, but wasn't also like he. I thought there was like, you know, I'm trying to think last year because like the thing yeah, is that I don't know because I thought last year he was talking about how, yeah, he's like pursuing the profits, but it's just to keep the board happy and he just wants to explore. But like, was that?
Yeah, but then he wouldn't help out.
He also
the
wanted to win
astronauts in trouble. Yeah.
And it's like when you're talking about people that are like billionaires, like I think saying that like greed is the motivator is not 100% the accurate answer. It's more of like, you know, mm-hmm. power and winning.
Yeah.
And money is just one of the ways you keep score. It's one of the totally. Victory point conditions that we recognize in the game of life. So.
Yeah. But I do want to see what Dev is up to. And yeah. I'd like to see more of Hilda Beast because I want to contrast the two. I want to see if I can detect like the true behind the scenes nature of what was going on at
Helios. And we met him because he had several conversations with Karen. It's like it seemed like if anything he was kind of the moral center of Helios and Dev was kind of the guy who's the hypocrite and fat playing fast and loose and the egomaniac. But maybe if he got the power for a decade it's switched.
Yeah, maybe. So let's go over to Ed and Danielle grabbing some pasta and talking about Kelly. She apparently hasn't responded to Ed yet after he told her that he's not coming back. And Danielle points out that he's been delaying her.
Yeah, we knew this. And now it's just the Danny's yeah. not going to, because he's like, oh, you know, I had to make sure that you had. It's like Danny's like, don't you push that bullshit off on me, Ed. It's
Danny being observant and insightful yet again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, these people have seen each other for so long and known each other under so many stressful situations that, like, you gotta, like, they have to be almost as intimate as, like, a married couple.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of, like, being able to read their facial expressions, body language, you know, when they're lying.
Yeah, I mean, that high bob stuff is a...
Yeah.
Is a...
This is a way to say
indicator
I love you.
Of that, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, there's so much baggage in high bob that it's...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a serious relationship. And I love this scene because it's doing a lot of things at once, right? It's pointing out that it's doing some character development. It's telling us that Kelly is very pissed at Ed, hasn't spoken to him, but it's also showing us the class divide here, showing us how observant Danielle is, how much they mean to each other, and doing just a lot of world building too. They're talking about how they're growing 3/4 of their food up here now. They have not only are there two options on the menu for the upper deckers here, and they're both fancy, but they can have both if they want. They can say, I want a second meal.
Can they really? Is that something
Ed
I don't want?
Yeah, Ed's like, I'll also have the pasta, because he got the chicken and he says, I'll also have a pasta.
Oh, I thought he was saying, I'll also have the pasta because that's what Danny got, but he's double fisting.
Pasta and chicken? Maybe it is. Yeah, I might have misread that.
I like the old man of Mars doubling up. Like,
couldn't he, though? He's the EXO. Of course he could.
I think he should be doing that, like, when he's talking to Miles. He should have two plates of exquisitely cooked food as he's having two lower deckers shovel it into his mouth from both ends like a Roman emperor being fed grapes on his chaise lounge.
And then Miles just gets whatever comes out of his door.
Yeah. Hey, I dropped a grape on the floor. Great boy. Suck it off the floor with your mouth.
Yeah.
No, you can't use your hands.
To be fair, they do still have to eat with shitty plastic utensils in the upper floors. So
what is going on with this? I've seen a spork, which is like a knife. I've never seen a knork. It's like this is a spatula knife that Danny's trying to cut chicken with. What the fuck?
All right.
It's built like a fucking canoe oar. I don't know.
Cutting chicken works different on Mars. I don't know if you're aware of this.
Really?
Yeah. It's something about the gravity in the atmosphere.
I see.
Yeah. You don't get the friction on the serrations.
Coriolis effect. You got to cut it counterclockwise instead of clockwise.
Right. It's like when you live in Australia.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go over to Miles again. His meal's not nearly as fancy. He and his new friends, I think this guy's name is Rich. That's what he's called earlier in the episode, but I'm really not certain.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea what this dude's name is?
Mm-mm. I didn't even know. I didn't even know what Cousin Mary from Downton Abbey's name was until you said.
Oh, it's Samantha Massey. Sorry. Anyway, they complain about the class divide, which is the opposite of what they thought Mars was all about. We find out that their food cards only work on their own level. Keeps them out of the mess upstairs. This is where I started to really hope Danielle was going to get wind of all this and just put the kibosh on it, because that is what needs to happen here.
Yeah, and it's like the whole... That's the thing. It's like, you know, Ed's talking about you need to take personal responsibility. But then the propaganda of Mars, like, you know, they get this Disney show that's about the Martian Thanksgiving and how everybody comes together and they share alike. And like all these myths that you find out about America, and then, you know, they're about Mars, and you go and it's the hypocrisy, you know, like you see the guy who's you probably saw portrayed by, I don't know, the Tom Hardy or whatever, like. The old man of Mars doing the Russian thing or the Martian Thanksgiving. You see him here saying, like, suck it up, buttercup. It's just jarring, you know,
especially for the guy, like the disparity here between what he was sold and what he got is light years different than what Ed was sold and what Ed got. Ed's driving around in a fancy fucking Corvette, which is probably one of several that he owns, you know, like he was sold the actual thing that he got. He knew what he was signing up for. These people didn't.
Yeah, and like the Fed, you can see progressively their idealism dying. You know, like this guy's like, I was ready for Martian Thanksgiving, and
then, you know, he tries to, you know, Tom Parker's death, he tries to put the positive spin on that. Rich is like, sounds like your friend died a hero. She's like, nope, just trying to get money for his family. And it's just, it's just it's radicalizing, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, these people are going to come back, and there's going to be a lot of stories told about what Mars is really like.
Yeah, and it's an inevitability about the inequalities there. It's like it's going to drive conflict. Mm-hmm. You can't escape it, you know? Like, you know, it's like a popular slogan in the last decade, the whole eat the rich, you know? But that was never supposed to be a policy prescription. That was like a warning that, like, sure, if the poor can't eat, they will, you know, if they're starving, they will eat the rich. Like, it's a warning for the powers that be that, like, you should make sure that it's not too rocky on the bottom, or you're going to find yourself, you know, gored by this vast beast. And you can see it's like, you know, no one would take this offer. Again, it'd be one thing if they're all in it and, like, old man Ed is, you know, eating cold meat paste alongside him. But, like, the second that some people can have better for reasons, but other people can't. Mm-hmm. That shit just doesn't fly. It doesn't fly with monkeys. One of my favorite experiments is I know I've shown it to you, but like a monkey that, like, there's like they're trained to do a task, sort stones from of different sizes and put them in cups, and they're getting paid cucumber slices, right? And you see these two monkeys and they're happily doing it, and then one of them gets paid a grape. And the other monkey is like looking at that and like, holy fuck, grapes? All right. And you can see him, like, he's like even more. I mean, like I said, these, like, it's so wild to see these monkeys do this. But he's like an employee that has dangled a bonus, and he's like super, and he puts it in a cup and he looks at it, and the person gives him a cucumber, and he looks at the other guy and a cucumber, and he like throws it on the ground, and then the next time it goes around, he looks at the other monkey gets a grape. He does the same job, he gets a cucumber. He fucking throws it at the rooster, starts shaking the cage and going ape shit, because this is how deeply baked in the sense of fairness is to us. It goes way back. And that was our kind of, like, it's the reason that we were able to fucking kick ass against saber-tooth tigers and mammoths and things that outweighed us 10, 15, 20 times, because we worked together and we shared the fruits of our labors. And it's only been the last couple hundred years where we've kind of stopped doing that. I don't know. It's just, it's just a monkey experiment, and they're getting, some people getting cucumbers and some people getting grapes, and it's not sustainable.
Yeah. And I guess the reason I like seeing this in this show is because I know that they are thinking about their response to this, right? If this is guiding us toward a Star Trek utopia type future, what is their prescription for this problem? That's what I'm interested to see. Like, I know all about the shit that they're telling me now. I don't need them to tell me this, but this is a prelude to telling me what they think we can do about it.
Yeah, I did, because, like, I think ultimately I was disappointed in the Expanse on that regard, because it's like, you know, it's like they're obviously, correctly diagnosing the problems. Mm-hmm. But, like, what is the solution? And I don't think they really, like, the solution, you know, how people came together in the Expanse, I don't think would work for, or I don't even know. I don't know how to translate that to, you know, it's like, and
you
suddenly
James
people
Holden,
start
right?
acting.
Like,
to have, like, these once in a lifetime leaders that are willing to risk their life for peace and equity.
And I think that's true in the real world also, but
it is, but
it
they
feels
just don't
more
come
hopeless.
Yeah, it's that's the thing. It's like, well, we just keep doing the same thing and hoping people will do differently. You know, somebody will do better. Yeah. And
it's easier to write that character than it is for history to produce that character in the real world. And it feels like, God damn, if that's the only way to get past this, it's not going to happen in my lifetime.
Yeah,
my lifetime is a drop in the bucket, you know?
You need better leadership. You need better citizenry to get yourself out of these holes, it seems like. And the people,
see.
And the groups that have those will prevail, and the groups that don't will not. You know,
We'll see how this all turns out. That's what I'm looking forward to. I don't know if we'll get it this season, or if it'll be something that is like the big thesis of this show.
Yeah, because can't be go back in time and have the Russians win the moon race. You know.
That's not a solution for us. I'm sorry.
That's not a solution you can implement, unfortunately.
No. Can't slingshot around this soul.
Mm-mm.
All right, Danielle tells Ed that she's feeling frustration from the Lower Decks. Ed thinks the problems are all philosophical, given that the Lower Decks are just here to make a buck. Apparently, they're not going to be able to fix the comms until next year at the earliest, which is some of the problem here. And Danielle decides, you know what, that's not good enough. And she orders him to get his best engineers on the project ASAP.
That's why Danielle is so good, because she's like, she's already where Ed needs to be, and she appeals to their shared histories, because he tries to, like, you know, pull the old man Mars routine. It's nothing that we didn't go through. And she's like, yeah, Ed, and how did we act when we were going through there? Were we happy about it? Did we almost kill each other in that small base? Didn't you go rogue? Didn't you start an international incident by, like, shooting a Russian and, like the fucking rose-colored glasses this guy has about his own past and his own place in history, and how she just definitely, and even with her bending over and breaking her back to kind of build this bridge, he's still being a complete fucking smug, arrogant dick, in my opinion, to Danielle. It's just tough. It's tough. It's not great for Bob relations, I don't think.
Yeah, there's something here. I can't quite put my finger on it, but they're doing something with this attitude toward these other people and whatever little time he has left, right? Because he's just decided he's going to die on Mars. And we see the first signs of that. And I don't know if this is like a fear response. If he's scared and he's like just trying to contextualize his own life at his own terms or whatever, but there's something they're doing with that too that I can't quite put my finger on.
So your thesis is he's decided he's going to die on Mars?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
He's, you know, worried about his tremor that he's developing, and the way that look at the end of last episode was very much like, I just told my daughter I'm never coming back.
I wonder if the doctors on Mars have actually told him as much. Like, look, your cardio back. Because I talked about that last episode. I wonder if, like, biologically he could, you know, as an old man, go back to, you know, from one-third to zero gravity to full Earth gravity, 1G. I wonder if, like, some doctor has told him, like, look, you can't ever go back to Earth. And he's just afraid to tell that to Kelly. But, like, goddamn, why? Why would you not want to level with your loved ones? But he's had that problem. You know, you think about the thing to put Joel Kinnaman on the map in terms of actors for me, because I never really regarded him all that highly, is that dinner scene between Kelly and Karen and him.
Yeah.
He does tend to
the academy, and she didn't want to go.
Yeah. He didn't want her to go because he is afraid of losing her. And like this kind of hypocritical too, afraid to be in a position that he's put, you know, Karen and his whole family and his entire life. Like, he does have a hard time emotionally leveling with his family on things that mean a lot for him. So I guess this would be in his character.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, we'll see how it plays out. Here's the thing that really irked me about this comm situation. I get the feeling that this is a Helios call to make.
I think it's explicitly said, yeah.
Yeah. Which I'm... Look, I know they're trying to do the partnership with the private industry, but is this not a NASA-controlled base? I know they have the Phoenix in orbit with Helios, but like...
That's... Because like, I don't know, because it seems like it's more of an international cooperation kind of thing, where like Nolan is M7, the boss. Yeah. I guess the base commander might be the closest to that thing. But yeah, the idea that like, there, and this goes back to the other critique of capitalism, the fact that they sent this cheap satellite out there with no thought of how they would repair it if something went wrong. Something that's like, that's in NASA's like DNA, like multiple redundancies and fails, which is why it's so fucking expensive. And Helios is like, oh, the shelf life of this satellite's 5 years. Like, we're going to replace it in five. It'll be fine. And like, they mentioned that there's just no docking points. There's no external hatches. Like, I get the idea that these astronauts got to go out there with like acetylene torches and like crack this fucker open. And
in their huge ass gloves trying to solder cast five wires. Like,
yeah.
Good luck.
In zero G.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to get my bearings on this base.
Of what if the plan doesn't work? No thought to what if the plan doesn't work, you know?
Yeah. And I like this. You know, there are a lot of forces at work here, right? Because we've seen back home that, you know, it's probably Hill the Beast himself that's petitioning the president to get this asteroid program back on track. Yeah. And president's putting pressure on the NASA program for it. And like,
yeah,
there's a lot of conflict here between private and public organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're doing a really good job telling that story. Ed just needs to realize he's part of the fucking private organization right now. He is the man helping make the bucks.
I do wonder, because like when Margo was running this, NASA was self-funding because they had so much stuff paying for, like, you know, all this public research was sold on the private market. I wonder if like if Helios is doing the classic thing of, you know, publicly subsidizing their losses, but privatizing their profits and their innovations.
I'm sure.
Yeah, like NASA and Russia and North Korea are helping, but like all the inventions that come out of the Helios labs, that's Helios property, and Helios is going to get the patents on that. And it does feel like under Marv, the wet bandit, NASA has suddenly been pilfered of all their huge financial advantages.
Yeah, it seems like Ed, in his mind, at least in his own mind, is trying to uphold the values of NASA. Maybe a NASA that no longer exists, right? A NASA that was about exploration, but is now torn between its two priorities of exploration and science, and then making profit for the companies that are subsidizing their space program.
Do you think Marv stopped up the sinks at NASA when he robbed the Johnson, the Molly Cobb Space Center?
For sure. Yeah.
Just stole the recipe for Tang. Time to turn the sinks on.
Do you think Ed's gonna chafe at being commanded around by Danielle? Because there,
yes,
this scene, he's a little like, he goes along with it because she is able to smooth things over with the joke and, you know, with appealing to their histories and stuff. But how
and the
long
fact
will
that
work?
In the military chain of command, she is the commanding officer.
She
make
is,
it so XO, yep. Like that's her. But like,
but he's senior in space, right? He's been in space longer than she has, and I can see that going to his head. And he's got a bit of an ego.
And he's patronizing her, and that's not good. That's not good for your second
right.
officer, first officer.
You can see it in the next scene where they're doing the repair. He's like, I told you this wouldn't work. I went along with it though. Time ready to shut it down.
Yeah, I noticed he kept it pretty private, but like, how, like, I don't think Ed, like, he would publicly disagree with Danny. You know, if Danny wanted to try one more time and he's like, you know, well, Helios said to shut it down, I think he would make it a public scene. And it's just like, that's going to be a problem. They're telling us a story that this is going to be a problem.
Seemed like it to me. I like the use of make it so XO.
Yeah. Towards a Star Trek.
Yeah. All right, let's get back to Aleta. She goes to NASA to apologize to Administrator Hobson for disappearing. And he says she's welcome to return to the team whenever she's ready, but he's caught short when she says, I'm ready now. He's concerned about her mental health. She says, oh, I'm fine. But then she has a flashback when Margo's name comes up, and she quits her job on the spot.
That's funny that, like, Marv will never understand what just happened. Like, as long as he lives, I'm trying to think of being a manager with an employee like this, and you kind of like everything you're being is like, oh, this is a bad idea. But like, well, you know, you got to treat her like an adult. So welcome aboard. And she's like, fuck you, I quit. Like, how could you ever understand what just happened?
Yeah.
It's like,
you literally have to be in her
pumped?
Head to understand it.
Yeah. And like, that's the thing. It's like, I want to say that Aleta is doing this for healthy reasons and she's taking, but like the way they told her, like a second that Margo got mentioned and like that bomb went off in her head and she just goes to a whole other place. Ah, man, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Thing is, he just dodged a huge bullet, right? Like, she is not in a place to work for NASA in a high stress position. She would have crumbled again at the next stress point
if she wasn't going to get help.
A huge
and,
bullet here,
and clearly she wasn't going to get help. Like, no. Aleta is super talented and driven, and she'd be a healthy Aleta would be an asset to any institution. But
I've seen it.
she seems like she's committed to not being healthy, unfortunately.
Yeah. How do you go months without working at an institution like NASA and still have a job? That seemed pretty far-fetched to me.
We'll be back right after this spacewalk. Strap in, we're diving into more For All Mankind. Yeah, I don't know whether she's like still getting paid or if she's just on leave. Like, I do think that there would be some political considerations for someone who was there for a long time with her background, with, you know, her, you know, like if she's actively traumatized on the job and you fire her for being I don't know. I was surprised, to be honest, but I do think they're also telling, like, you know, as much shit as we talked about life on Mars, that like maybe things are a little bit kinder and gentler in this version of America.
Yeah, she has a little more latitude to
Al Gore. Does it look if you fire a high up NASA engineer because they have trauma from a terrorist bombing that they suffered through less than 8 years ago, you know, as they're going through another traumatic event? Like, it seems like, yeah, like maybe that wouldn't look good in Al Gore's administration.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Not in Al Gore's America, Jim.
I wouldn't know. Never lived in it.
Well, you're on his internet. You're on his internet right now.
It's true.
Internet, best, most fair, egalitarian place in the universe.
Yeah, saving the climate, saving the environment. All right, a lady goes to Julio's Tex-Mex, what used to be the outpost, for a drink. There she spots Kelly also drinking. Kelly thanks her for saving her and her son's life. Then she tells Leda about the setback in the robotics program, and Leda tells Kelly that she quit her job, and they toast to not being sure.
Yeah, nice to see the outpost.
Well, in its current state, tacos, where's the spaghetti, man?
Yeah. Come on. But there is kind of like this, the scene did a really good job of establishing this desire for nostalgia and comfort, and also that you can't ever go back home because you moved out 30 years ago and people have bulldozed it and turned it into a parking lot, you know? That NASA's not what... I mean, this is something that's interesting because, like, every fucking season of For All Mankind has had astronauts bitching about how NASA's not the same. They've changed, man.
And especially this bar, right? Like, it was when Karen bought it, it was different. And yeah, everybody was worried about it all the time.
Yeah. And like, I like the idea that they'd never met, but they knew each other from reputation. Like, like, imagine running into the woman who suggested you strap your pregnant ass to a rocket to get off of, like, wild shit, right? And it's like the backdrop of that being the setup of the conversation, I thought was really good. And this show's just really firing on cylinders when it comes to just command of like their themes and their settings and their characters and how it all kind of comes together.
And it tricked me this episode because I thought they were really setting up something where Kelly was going to drag Alita along into her next venture, right? She was going to take this promotion because it's the
smart thing
for her. Yep. The smart thing to do. And then she was going to say, you know what? A lady could probably use a job over here. Let's get her in. But it turns out to be the exact opposite. Yep. Alita's going to have the idea that's going to make them both comfortable again.
Take this endeavor private.
Yeah. And we'll see how that goes. Anyways, Miles is shocked to see the price of life on Mars. And he goes to straighten it out with Palmer. And he's complaining, but he says, look, everybody's getting screwed. I'm getting screwed. And then the only guy who isn't getting screwed, Ed, comes up in the middle of this conversation and gives him an earful of personal responsibility.
Again, it's rough seeing Ed be this fucking tone deaf. And
yeah,
but he also comes by it honestly, man. A lot of people, this is shit that NASA told him over the headsets 30 years ago, you know, and he swallowed the shit and kept marching, you know.
And it was a time when that was more accurate, too.
Right.
I mean,
yeah,
now you've got Helios involved. And
yeah. And also, like, no one, there wasn't, like, it wasn't like fucking, you know, it was Ed, Danny, and Gomer, Goofy,
Goofy,
Gordo. Thank you.
Okay, I think that's who you're going for.
Like, Gordo wasn't eating filet mignon,
no,
and shrimp scampi, all you can eat at the Red Lobster buffet with cheddar biscuits on the side, and Danielle and Ed are looking over him just fucking mopping the floors for ants for sustenance. You know, they didn't have that. They were all in it together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I just like. Yeah, it's just like I said, it's hard not to be disappointed in old Ed.
And especially in this scene where it's like the literal company store, right? I mean, they're charging you for toothpaste at $14. Yeah. The sad thing is I'm looking at these prices and I'm going, yeah, that's about right for our day. Yeah, you could pay $14 for a tube of toothpaste if you want. That's not crazy.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
When he was supposed to be learning this history in college, he was off flying Phantoms in Korea and Vietnam. So he missed all those. True. He missed all those lessons.
So, yeah, I don't know. They're really reinforcing this idea of the class divide. Almost how, to a comical point in this episode. I think it's a little heavy handed.
Ed's the coal mining boss. Yeah. Like. But I think they definitely are setting him up to be an antagonist of sorts on Mars.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think him and Danielle are going to butt heads this season. And I bet Danielle's going to butt heads with her superiors back on Earth, too. I think Hobson and her are going to butt heads quite a bit.
What's this? Yeah, because like, there's going to be something next episode that happens, and she's going to want to pay for it, and Marv is going to be like, well, you know, maybe if you hadn't taken that risky Martian synchronous orbit repair job, we would have some of the budget left to do. Yeah, I can see her definitely being caught between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, I really want her to get up here and restructure everything, though. Get morale back, you know? I mean, that's part of the problem why things are not super on track is nobody works their best when they're under these conditions, when they have no morale. So lift the morale of the lower decks a bit.
But it's also like, you know, we talk about the importance of you have to have good leadership to affect change, but also like those leaders have to have some kind of support. And if they're not given it.
Yeah. And she's barely getting it this episode. We go over to these engineers trying to repair the comms, and the entire time Ed's getting in his I told you so's, you know, how hard this is, how much it's not going to work with Danielle. But she's not willing to call off the mission. And eventually they succeed after rebooting the satellite.
And they've had this relationship kind of before where he's kind of like, you know, poo-pooed and, you know, been, you know, patronizing of her before. But like, man, I just don't. Because that's the thing is like Danielle came here personally asked on a favor on behalf of the U.S. president to get this thing flying right.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if she's going to have the mind to put up with Ed's bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. All it took to fix this problem was caring just a little bit.
Yeah.
Ed could have called his engineers to do this at any time, and he never did because he thought, well, fuck them. They're just here for a buck.
Right. And I can talk to Kelly. So what are these dumb Derek, out of work Derek workers need to talk to their family? They're all divorced, deadbeat dads anyway, right? Trying to probably came here to Mars to get away from their family. Can you imagine? Can you fucking imagine what a shitbird you gotta be to hide out from your family on Mars? My God.
Yeah.
People of low character.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And like, that's the thing is like, Ed has no, like his head should be on fire. The hypocrisy coming out of his mouth. And he's immune to it, man.
Yeah. He just doesn't see it. He's just kind of dense in that regard. But
yeah.
I don't know. Like I said, I expect a catastrophe in this scene. I expected things to blow up and them to lose comms altogether for, you know, the next year and things to be really hard on Mars because of it. Right.
And then things got worse. Yeah.
Worked just fine. Let's go back over to Elaida and Kelly, still drinking and talking about their troubles. Elaida is sad about letting Margo down. Kelly's sad about losing her project. And this time they toast to screwing up. And Kelly suggests they TP Hobson's house. Talk about screwing up. Let's just go make this 10 times worse.
I actually thought it was going to happen. When they had the establishing shot of the outside, I'm like, I was looking in the trees for toilet paper and stuff. And like Marv coming out like, what the hell? But no, I think I think the only paper was thrown is the latest business plan and she's working on.
I like her life finds a way speech. The stuff about the liquid being the perfect medium for life to exist in, because it can get close, it can form those bonds, and you can't when there's too much distance.
And the fact that life finds a way and doesn't give up is the, you know, kind of Kelly's touchstone. I like that.
Mm-hmm. The next morning, Kelly wakes up hungover on Elaita's couch, and Elaita, once she gets her coffee, Elaita says she has a way to keep Kelly's project going with private funding. Kelly's not sure she can leave NASA and go it alone, but Elaita says you won't be going it alone.
Where did casting find this little girl? Because, oh my God, what a chip off the old block. That that look that she's leveling at Kelly about, like, you puked on our couch and it smells. it's so funny. It's such a little Elaita.
Freaking Mr. Sunshine, bright and early. Fuck this guy, man. This lady puked on your carpet and slept hungover on your couch. She does not want you all chipper this morning. She wants you very sedate. She wants you with the coffee in hand, by the way. You don't ask if she wants coffee. You just bring her the coffee.
Yeah.
Ah, oh, this guy.
Yeah, he's turning the screws a little bit.
Apparently, Elaita handles her booze way better than Kelly.
Yeah, how put together she was after this all-night bender where she threw her brain into this problem. But, like, I that's kind of... Well, you know, she's a lot like Margot that way. She's happiest when she's solving a problem. And,
yeah,
you know, this idea, it's like, you know, someone is just going to, like, you know how to do your job. You just can't find the money. And someone's just going to swoop in and make it their life's mission to do that for you.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty nice. Pretty nice deal.
Yeah, we'll see how it turns out. But her husband likes to see this, too. I think it's a good deal for both of them, right? He gets both of them kind of where they need to be. Elaita back doing something she's passionate about, not moping around. And then Kelly gets to search for life. That's what she wants to do.
I do worry about the foundations this is built on with Elaita and sobriety and the mental health and the trauma and all that. But yeah, I can see why her husband sees this as a huge improvement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, seeing his wife have a purpose and you not just kind of flailing around playing Guitar Hero and taking their TV apart at 3 o'clock in the morning has got to be nice to see.
All right. The team at Happy Valley watches a soccer match together. Ed's treat, except for Miles, who is checking his messages from home. They're all so happy and he misses them dearly. He tries to muster a cheerful response, but he can't manage it. And then he chats with Samantha about going back home, but apparently his contract won't really allow it.
Read the fine print. If you're going to work, I mean, that's like not knowing that it's going to be $150,000 to come back. It's like, I'm not a member of the workers' party so much that I can't be like, Jesus Christ, dude, did you really just like you just believe this recruiter's promises and you let him do this and that and then you saw, oh my god, but
we don't really see the if there was a hard sell on Mars, if there was like, well, I mean, if you don't sign today, I mean, yeah, you can take this contract and read it, but if you don't sign today, somebody is going to step in and take your spot.
It probably,
you
know, is a lot. There probably is a lot like that. There probably was a lot of pressure, and, you know, obviously Miles, you know, this isn't even something they offer, like, oh, you know, it's, I guess we could give you tomorrow. There is a little bit of that, but I also would love to see this challenge in court. Like, some, like, do they qualify their employees at all? Like, what if someone goes insane and they have to, or has, like, what if they have a severe medical issue? They have to be brought back to Earth. Like, did they still have to be? I would love to see this clause challenged in court. You can take someone hundreds of millions of miles away from Earth and then be like, oh, you want to get back before your term for any reason? 150K.
Yeah. I think that's extortion, maybe kidnapping. It's something.
I mean, that's how the indentured servitude shit worked. You know, you technically weren't a slave, but you got a real lot of debt and you owe it to this person. And,
we're way out here. Where are you going to shop other than the company store?
Yeah. Yeah. I did like, I liked the Martian weather, how consistent it was. Like the last 9 days or 6 days, it had fluctuated barely a degree, but the nightly lows, negative 90 C, daily highs at negative 19, which is just below, like it's 1 or 2 degrees below freezing in Freedom units. But negative 90 is like 130 below. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's
it's a harsh mistress of Mars.
The thing that stood out to me is how his family's opinion of him has changed so drastically. Like, they are all smiles, all bubbles, no troubles with him now. Even the daughter, who was very like standoffish when he showed up.
Yeah, I think that I could see, because like you could tell that there's still some love. You know, mm-hmm. You hear no love lost. There was love lost in this relationship. And even if there wasn't, like, you know, her wanting to put a good face on this for her daughters, or dad's risking her life. And yeah, I bet. Like, it's still like novel enough that, you know, like, I imagine if you tell your friends at school that your dad's going to Mars, that would be like, yeah, this is like your dad goes from being kind of a deadbeat loser to a guy who's putting his life on the line for not just you, the family, but like, this is like making Earth better too. Like, I could see it coming around. I do wonder
another thing that traps him here too. Like, it's not just the money anymore, it's his family's opinion of him. He can't go back and disappoint them.
Yeah, because like, if he went back now, he'd be even worse off. He'd be a bigger stone mill around their neck. I do wonder, like, where is this going in terms of like desperation and violence and
probably bad places. I don't know if Ed be assassinated, himself, but
like, I talked about the apple tree, but like, would Ed, I recall correctly, one of the, I talked about Red Mars, Blue Mars, Green Mars. I believe Red Mars ends with an assassination, for political and economic reasons.
Interesting.
And that'd be interesting. Like, if someone assassinated Ed, what would Danny do? Because I could see, like, I could see that being so traumatic to Danny that she goes hard line, right? It's like the trap you get pulled.
That feel like a Star Trek story, man.
I've got no assurance that this is what the show's trying to do. Trying to, like, be aspirational or, like, a cautionary tale. So.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen interviews with Ron Moore where he thinks of it in terms of Star Trek, and that's like the goal of the show is to,
but it can't be Pollyanna. Like, humans gotta these seasons have revolved around like crucial people making life-changing decisions that have phenomenal impacts on the planet.
Yeah, I mean, there was a terrorist attack last season. Like, it's
exactly
not, it's not gonna be all peaceful. I could see Ed. Yeah, I could see Ed getting assassinated. It's not outside of the realm of possibility. But sending Danny down a hardline road seems... That seems like antithetical.
That's the shit that does it, though, right? You know?
Yeah,
like,
but
I'm sympathetic,
man,
for
how
you
bring
I'm
anything
sympathetic
back
to
from
that? Your, I'm sympathetic from your concerns, but you can't fucking murder people that I love, you know?
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, it's the Marco Cenaros of it all, right? Like,
yeah,
you there's a bridge too far at some point,
right?
All right, Samantha takes Miles to relax at Ilya's bar, his vodka bar that he's set up, which I guess, yeah, makes sense. It's on the lower decks here, the sub decks. They're remembering Parker, not Grigori.
Right.
This is their hero, the guy that died in this accident that's getting no love on Earth or in the upper decks.
Seems very workers' party, you know, like the challenge and response. Absolutely. About the opiate of the masses and all that kind of stuff. Like I said, it's painted with a pretty, these aren't too thin coats of narrative painting. They're laying it on pretty thick. I like they're bumping some Lyrics Born in the background. Loved hearing that.
Didn't recognize that.
Yeah, I was a pretty big fan of the indie rap label Quantum. There was, you know, what's that? That are all Blackalicious and Jurassic 5 okay. and Dilated Peoples, like run around together.
Gotcha. I don't know if vodka should be the color of urine, but you make do. Didn't look very good. I would be dubious on that.
And like he somehow uses the airlock to get rid of the, like, he exposes the vodka to the airlock of space, and I don't know how that that didn't make sense to me, but
I'm not familiar enough with distillation and
in a vacuum of space.
Well, especially there, yeah.
See,
to know what he's up to.
Mark Watney had the wrong idea. He's trying to eat those potatoes. You turn into vodka.
Drink them. Yeah.
Yeah. Good, drink your calories. Liquid diet.
And then we got the final scene here where Margot wakes up on yet another Russian morning. She makes coffee. She watches Russian TV, which is apparently a bad sign. I wasn't picking up on. She really wants to
all
call the number
on
Lake
the card. All the time.
Yep. So she doesn't call this number, right? She thinks her apartment might be bugged, and so she decides not to call the number.
I think so. I don't think I don't think she called the number.
Yeah, I think that's
true. Bullfinch was at least that cautious.
Yeah. But she makes her usual morning rounds. The streets, however, are empty, and the baker is very dour baker, severe baker, says she should go home.
Totally again, the real Russians know what this means. Like, this is they understand that, like, this is not the time for glasnost and perestroika. This is the time for, you know, tucking your head and down into your warm winter coat and keeping your eyes on your feet, on your toes, and not paying too much attention to what's going to happen in the next couple of days if you want to be safe.
Well, there are some people who apparently don't want to be safe, because she gets to the newsstand and she finds a large crowd gathering as authorities shut down the stand. And the crowd grows angry, so more police show up and begin arresting everyone. And Margot's scooped up in that chaos. This is, I think this is the prelude to the attempted coup, right?
Yeah, and like, I'm not sure, again, who's cooing who. Like, I'm, you know, if it goes like to like a delayed version of real history, you'd have communist hardliners upset at these proposals, trying to sweep the politicians out of power and reinstitute whatever hardline Stalin communist, I don't know what the fuck, the Red
Which
Army.
Only like
what kind of communism?
Yeah. It's not a successful coup. I think Gorbachev like survives it as president of the.
But what happens if you delay that for 10 years and extra pressure builds up? Like, is Yeltsin going to climb the tank and rally the people? I don't know.
I don't know either.
I'm very curious to see. And the other thing is, like, are you with me on this theory that this is Margot's reintroduction to the world scene? Like, that there's going to be footage of her and like Elaida's going to be watching and being like, the fuck, Martin? Then
I mean, what, like, else is there that's interesting to do with Margot? Like, she's so sidelined at this point, you have to shake that up, otherwise what is the point of her entire storyline here?
Her going to the
gulag, just to give us the insight. I mean, it could just be her traveling the political system here in Russia and us getting a glimpse inside of it without
Do you think the hardliner, like, because that's the question. It's like, if hardliners take power, why would they have made contact with Margot? Are they going to want to replace Katish with Margot? Like, why the hell would hardliners?
Yeah,
I wonder if it's the opposite. Weird. If like softliners are taking over, yeah. Like pro capitalist, like just get it's just what is this Soviet Union bullshit even happening? Like, just get rid of it. I wonder if it's. And like, oh, put a Westerner over the space center. I don't know.
That's entirely possible.
Because they did reach out and make contact with her in advance of this coup.
And that was really interesting. And that's the thing. This could be, you know, this could be an agent of the KGB. This could be an agent of some other faction of the government. This could be a double agent. This could be a triple agent.
Right.
I don't know who this person is. When it comes to the Russian spy game, I assume nothing, I guess.
I will say that as Margot's glasses hit the pavement, I did say, if Margot had gone to the KGB, none of this would have ever happened.
Maybe.
We'll see if she's rotten in a gulag KGB. In three episodes, if I can say I told you so again. But
yeah.
And then I
would
had
it
a
be
nice
any
touch.
Worse than that apartment? Come on.
I mean,
I've heard stories.
That apartment didn't seem that bad, to be honest to me. But I did thought it was a nice touch to have Swan Lake play over the credits too. It's pretty nice.
And that's it. We'll see where we pick up next episode. You're listening to Hi Bob. We'll be right back. Hi Bob. Welcome back to more For All Mankind.
Did you know that we have feedback, Jim?
I guessed we might.
Our satellite not down. Our 4K transmission's coming through loud and clear through D-mail. If you'd like to send us to our D-mail address, it's FAM, F-A-M, stands for All Mankind, at baldmove.com. First up is Dan. He says, the USSR, some faction within the USSR, sabotaged the asteroid capture. He's a Kronos truther, this Dan.
Oh, okay. That's an assertion and a half.
So he defends his conspiracy theory as follows. Recall the interseason news shorts where they show the Soviet economic boom. They mention it's been powered by mining and export of rare earth materials or metals for use in EV batteries, etc. The asteroid belt, and perhaps this asteroid in particular, is chock full of those metals. I think that line got tossed out in one of the season 4 trailers, and I believe it to be true in real life. Successful space-based mining of a massive supply of rare earth metals equals total Soviet economic collapse. Moscow can't let it happen. I'll bet Downton Abbey lady was in on the sabotage. Helios pays fat bonuses, but the Kremlins are even fatter. Thus the need to keep Margot's nose out of the after-action review. My question is, why would, because like Russia is in partnership with the US and Helios and all this, like wouldn't they get like an equal cut of whatever is going to be coming in from the mining profits? So it's like, and also I think that mining stuff will help Mars, but like
it's not coming back to the Earth.
It's not coming back to Earth. So like having a huge supply abundant on Earth, I think would still be would put you in the catbird seat for generations to come.
The only thing I could think there is if they see this as, you know, the tip of the iceberg for a mining operation, right? If they want to nip this space mining stuff in the bud and just show it's a fool's errand and it's dangerous and a bad idea.
Or if you're like a communist hardliner, you don't like this cozying up to capitalism and McDonald's in your borders, like you sabotage this to make things deliberately tough so that the Russian, you know, because I think there's always like, you know, it's not like the Russians didn't know that United States had an average better quality of life. It's like, oh, it's the decadent West. They're fat cats and their capitalists get rich and they're off the backs of the underclass where we're all, yeah, it sucks over here, but we're all in the suck. Don't pay attention to the Politburo members getting picked up in their Mercedes and eating their foie gras and wintering in their dakas and the, like
oligarchs over here.
It's all bull. Like to my like, I'm not like, look, I'm not going to have tankies on here telling me that the Soviet Union was a utopia. They had problems on the other side of the spectrum from America. But like, yeah, I don't know. I could see it. I could see it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I completely buy the geopolitical rationale that Dan's laying out here, but more to come.
Who
nothing
done
this episode
it?
Directed
Gregory?
This
vote.
Who, what?
Is Gregory the hardliner?
Yeah,
he's a villain all along?
He's in a KGB sleeper cell. Supposed to be the first Soviet agent on Mars is why he went back.
Mm-hmm. And he's the one putting the pins in the asteroid, right? The mounts.
True. Shoddy penmanship.
Mm-hmm.
Craig T. says, I'm relieved to hear you both enjoyed this first episode. Always tough coming back and setting up the stories after time jump, and FAM always excels at doing that. I agree. We talked about, like, that's a talent that I first noticed on, like, The Deuce, where That's another show that told the time, you know, each season there'd be a decade elapse, and they did such a great job of where they left the characters in space and time for you to come back and understand, like, they were on a trajectory, you know? Like, you don't need to know what the astronauts do between Earth and Mars, because it's just a lot of the same shit, but the exciting points are leaving Earth and entering Mars orbit, right?
Yeah.
And For All Mankind does that very well, too. They're really good at tossing the ball to the future and having the future catch it and everybody follow along. Craig says, I've noticed there's no official podcast this year, probably due to the strikes, which is both sad, but hopefully an opportunity for you guys to capture more people's attention. Yeah, that'd be nice, because, like, again, this is a... seems like a small pond. There's not a whole lot of podcasts covering this. I know there's a few that people like, ours included. But the, I don't know. You think the official podcast being 86 is good or bad?
Oh, I mean, for us in particular, it's probably good. I don't like to see it happen. I always like to get the perspectives of people closer to the material. But... yeah, I think it will help our audience.
We in the decadent podcast West enjoying the downfall of, I also noticed that when it was mentioned that For All Mankind was coming back, pretty much everyone is surprised to hear it. It's definitely a problem Apple has promoting its own shows, which is a concern when they do so many great shows and you want to see not only more seasons of what they do, but more of what they do. I'm not sure why it's so hard. I don't know why it seems like in the last 4 or 5 years, I'm not sure when it started, but like it used to be you had a lot more lead time that, like, you know, you would know that when a show was coming back 6 months, 9 months in advance, pretty much to the week. And it seems like, especially post-pandemic, it's been as soon as the post-production's finished and the film prints are still wet from the developing fluid, it is like it's coming in 3 weeks and it's going to start with 2 episodes, and it's just like it's ready fire aim a lot, and it's tough for this market, and it's really tough because there's so many other options too, right? Like Apple is probably in the top 10 of all streaming, but there's like what, 50 streaming channels at this point now? Like it's insane. So it's all this hurry up, no promotion, relying only on social media promotion, no traditional, like you get some things like Ted Lasso. I saw they really got behind that. But it's just tough to catch people's eyeballs. And it seems like maybe Apple is trying maybe more of a word of mouth kind of thing.
Yeah, their marketing for this stuff has been surprisingly subdued, I would say, given the stranglehold they have on their target audience. I mean, they're looking at their phones, which are Apple phones, every single day for hours upon hours. They could blast this stuff out in front of you if they really wanted to, and it could get egregious and annoying.
Yeah, but like that would be,
they're really
crazy
playing
too.
It reserved. Oh, I agree. I would hate that, but
I will
say
that
it almost seems like they've gone the opposite way, where they're not advertising enough.
Apple is super accommodating in terms of screeners and like press access, so maybe they're also trying to like make roads more like grassroots, because like, you know, going to some outlets is and trying to get screeners as an independent media source is like going to Ed for a problem with your paycheck. They're like, why do you know, they're hostile and skeptical and gatekeeping and all that. And Apple, Apple's the opposite. Like they are very generous with supporting people like us. And I think it's maybe they're trying to shore up that weakness, but I don't know.
Yeah. Across the board there, I feel like they're trying to be the kinder, gentler corporation, you know, supporting privacy and security, and you know, not getting in your face with the advertising stuff like they could.
Yeah, they don't want to whore out the,
which is smart. They have a premium brand.
Yeah, there's a mystique to Apple, and if they turn it into Times Square, like you know, some like Samsung, for example. Oof, love advertising everywhere on your TVs and your phones and
Oh yeah.
Lena says, Hi, Bob. Just writing in to say, I was legit confused for a solid 2 minutes thinking I was looking at a de-aged Jennifer Jason Leigh when they were showing Milo's wife or Miles' wife. So it was wild to hear y'all call it Rebecca Ferguson, but I can see that now too. It's funny how people, okay. Yeah. She's got that kind of approximate face syndrome. And,
yeah, I see it for sure.
JJL is going to be on Fargo this season. So, and we just had Ferguson on Silo. So I'm thrilled that you decided to cover For All Mankind again. It's one of my favorite shows, and Bald Move is my favorite podcast. So this year would not have been the same if you couldn't fit it in your schedule. Well, again, thanks to the generosity of Apple and their screeners, because I don't know that we would have if we had trouble getting, because this is going to go over Christmas break and we prefer to spend that with our families, and it's going to be super busy with Fargo, and everything was clustering at the end of the week, and it was just really looking. And when we got the screeners, it was that made the decision a lot easier. So thanks to Apple for and their publicity department for letting the little guys at the trough. Scott V says, I think the show wanted us to expect to see Elaida and Margot's old job. I know I did. A short answer to why not is she has PTSD and probably turned the job down if it was offered to her. But I think the show did not give Elaida that job for a reason. My guess is Houston is rapidly becoming less important in solving mission problems. With the communication lag and physical distance away, Ed's better off saying, Happy Valley, we have a problem, rather than Houston. So the person in charge of Happy Valley Actual that Ed will not listen to will be more important than the person in Houston that Ed also would not listen to. he gets the essential Ed quality. Yeah. So I feel like the writers were free to take Elaida in whatever direction they desire. This might be a springboard to get her into space again at some point, which might not seem realistic if she takes the Margo role on Earth. It does seem, you know, this is pretty prescient, I thought. Obviously, this was before the new episode that we just talked about came out. You put her in the Margo job, like that person doesn't quit and jump ship to Helios or private equity firm or private research firm, right? There's too much.
I don't think so.
Yeah, you're committed at that point. But having her being a little discontent, having her being a little bit of friction between her understanding of NASA and the original mission, and it's pretty, like I said, this show knows what they're doing when they transition characters a decade into the future. So
who is still at NASA that we give a shit about? Is it just Danielle?
That's a damn good question.
I think Elaida was the last holdout.
Yeah.
Until Danielle came back.
Will Tyler? The first gay astronaut?
Well, I think he wasn't in this episode at all.
He wasn't. He was in last episode. So, like, you know, Kelly. But yeah, it's definitely losing. Speaking of mystique and cachet, NASA seems to be losing its mystique and cachet in this era.
Yeah, which I think is scary because they have, you know, whatever tether exists to the old ideals of space exploration is kind of lost with NASA. They're the last people holding that flame, it seems.
Scott had a whole other section of feedback where he talked about the difference between the way the private sector looks at space travel versus like NASA, where, like, you know, NASA even was as careful as they are with the budget and the oversight that they had, taking 10 years to get to the moon. They still killed 3 astronauts in the path to that and took 9, you know.
Oh, if you think Elon's not going to kill more than 3 people getting to Mars.
They haven't yet, right? Like, the private space program hasn't killed anyone yet.
That's only because they're blowing up rockets instead.
I am not looking forward to the inevitable congressional hearings when that happens. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, I do. It'll be interesting to see when they cross that Rubicon in real life. But yeah, on the show, it's like, you know, you had so many space disasters happening from, you know, the best and the brightest with like a mandate to serve the public, and not that now you've got the profit motive of, you know, how many, because he questioned like how many attempts did they make on this asteroid, you know, did it doesn't seem like. And of course, you never know, but like a NASA would probably first take the craft and do a close approach to the asteroid, but they wouldn't land on it. And then they would do a close approach and then they would land on it. And then they would do, and then they would try to get all the tether system and get the built the thing. And then they would test it. And it'd be a lot less like just show up with all the things and hope it goes well, which is what it feels like this mission was a lot of.
You can have it cheap, fast, or safe. Pick two.
Yeah, and it seems like a lot of the horrier space disasters have been the hotel, you know, Helios personnel fucking things up that weren't properly vetted for space, like you know, people were more concerned with getting their bonuses to their families. They're struggling back on Earth and doing things safe and sane. And it does seem like they're consistently not that there wasn't enough bullshit, you know, in terms of brinksmanship between the Soviet Union and the United States fucking things up before. But like, yeah, the profit motive is it's a hell of a drug.
It is what it is, you know.
Yeah.
Safety is not their primary concern. Full stop.
No, it's not a concern, but...
But it's not their first concern, unlike NASA, where it is.
All right, that's going to do it for All Mankind. Again, if you'd like to send us feedback for All Mankind, it's FAM, fam, at baldmove.com. If you want to know what else we're doing, we're about to start Fargo. We've got True Detective in the new season. We've got a lot of cool movies coming out. Speaking of cool movies with Joel Kinnaman in it, we're going to be seeing Silent Night early in December. Best way to follow us along for everything we're doing is on social media. We're at Bald Move everywhere except for TikTok. We're at Baldest Move. And then if you'd like to support us in what we're doing here, honestly, that's another thing. For All Mankind's popular with our club, and we got a lot of increase in traffic as the season went on, and that was something we definitely thought about in bringing For All Mankind back. So if you'd like to support us to keep us doing the shows that you love, we could use it. Support.baldmove.com and get some cool stuff for yourself. Ad-free feeds, more audio and video content, etc. That's it. We're signing off from Happy Valley until next week. Until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Bye, Bob.